This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
Thank you for the low-key welcome. That's appreciated. This is my fourth conference in 7 days. I've been saying the same thing, so I might just be repeating myself. Or I might be saying, have I told you this already? Because I can't remember what I've said to which audience. But at a recent conference that I spoke at, it was a room about this size with about this number of delegates, and I had all the speakers sat on the front row, and I was the first person to speak. And the conference organiser stood up and announced me, and when I stood up to walk from the seat to the podium, which was about four steps, all this music started. I thought, oh, what have they done? And it was the Free song, All Right Now. Better music than that. And that song obviously made people in the room think, oh, it's going to be all right, it's going to have all the answers to everything. And for people of a certain generation, that song is also synonymous with the chewing gum advert and the really good-looking bloke with the tight leather trousers and the white T-shirt. So you just feel the sort of palpable sense of people thinking, not only is he going to know all the answers, he's going to be really good-looking as well. And you just sort of feel the disappointment when I got up and waddled onto stage looking like a loser. Thanks for not embarrassing me to the organisers of the conference. The other thing that I want to say before I start is, as we've gone through this morning, I've slowly had to start taking things out of my presentation, as everybody else has said it before me. So I'm only left with the really negative bits. So if you're looking for a good news story, you know you're not going to get it from me. I want to start off just by saying a few words about Helloa, because normally when you say Helloa to people, they think that there's something wrong with you. So I think it's just worth spending a minute or two just saying what the association is. We've got over 800 members from 142 different institutions within our membership. It's the Higher Education Liaison Officers Association, so it's people that work in universities doing sort of outreach, school liaison, sometimes admissions, sometimes marketing type roles, but very focused on the sort of front-facing part of engaging with potential students. We've been around for over 20 years, and we operate on a national level, but we've also got a group structure as well. And we divide the UK into nine groups, so the Scotland group and a Wales group. Northwest and Northern Ireland is a group, Northeast is a group, Midland, Southwest, Southeast, Anglia and London. And we try and bring our members together for training, for networking, for professional development, really about trying to professionalise the area of school liaison outreach, recruitment type work. The strong focus on regionality within the association, because we think that's where it's most effective. And like I say, the focus on those nine groups. But because of that regionality, it also means that our members, I think, have got a really excellent understanding of what's going on in the ground in their areas, what the schools need, where the schools are at in terms of their collaboration with each other, and what the other HEIs are doing as well, but also working with other agencies and other organisations to make sure that there is sort of some sense of what's happening on the ground in those areas. Our purpose is really threefold, very straightforward. First of all, it's about promoting entry to all sectors of higher education, about getting people to go to university, to the right place, the right university, the right course, but particularly to have concern for the nature and quality of information given in the UK, either directly or indirectly, to potential students. And that's something that we are concerned about, and I'll say why that's a growing concern, but also, as I said before, the professional development of our members and making sure that they've got the right tools that they need to be professional in their roles, but to make sure that they are giving good impartial advice and guidance to potential students and their families and their supporters, whether that be teachers or other professionals. So that's kind of what we're about and where we're at. I just want to outline some of the key challenges for IAG in the next couple of years, and there won't be a single one of these that you don't know about already or that somebody else hasn't already said. Cuts to local authority connection service is going to be problematic as we move forward, and I'll come back to that in a second. The statutory duty to teach careers education has been repealed in the Education Bill, and that to me seems like a strange thing to do. The ambition to extend careers guidance to the age of 18 has been dropped, and that, frankly, is more than bizarre. If this wasn't being recorded, I might use more choice language, but I'm just concerned that it's going to sort of last forever, that someone's recording it, so I'll be careful about what I say. But the range and scope and the effectiveness of this new all-age career service. It's going to come into effect in April 2012, apparently. It's an interesting situation as well. And I just want to reflect on three things about that all-age career service that I think we should be concerned about and we should be lobbying about as IAG professionals. The first issue is really about how this relates to schools and what are schools actually expected to do in terms of the statutory need to do things, whether or not you can actually employ careers people within your school or whether you do actually have to source impartial IAG. And there's this kind of suggestion that you could just do web-based stuff and that will count as being impartial. But how you can't stop people accessing that. That is not providing a service to students. That's something that's already there. So how this career service actually interacts with schools, I think, is an issue. The second issue is about the service itself and what's the structure going to be, because nobody knows that yet. What's its status going to be? Is it going to be a policy body? Is it going to be a professional body? Is it going to be a quality assuring body? Or is it just going to be an umbrella term for a group of people doing their roles out on the ground? I think that needs to be clarified quickly. And also the quality standards, and how do we know that the people operating under this system are the right people to be doing the job? Who's actually checking that what they're saying is correct? I think that needs to be a concern. And the final issue on this all-age career service is actually how it's going to be funded, because there's a big problem here that I can see in terms of where the money is going to come from. It's a jointly funded venture between BIS and Department for Education. And BIS, to my understanding, have been quite upfront about saying, here's our £82 million. This is the bit that we're putting in. And that's going to cover some face-to-face stuff, and it's going to cover the online and phone type stuff. Then the Department for Education that arguably seem less keen on actually moving this forward have said, well, we've got £7 million. That we can put in, which is about the cost of careers of connections online at the moment. And what nobody seems to be talking about really is where the other £203 million that the Department for Education have got, the previously funded connections, where's that actually gone? And whether this is actually just going to disappear down a hole, because no one seems to be sort of addressing where that money is going. And I think, you know, without meaning to be political about it, we've just got to be careful that this doesn't become a smokescreen for a big cut that just no one sort of notices because it slips through under the radar. So we need to think about that and the transitional arrangements between what happens now with local authorities having to make big cuts to their careers type stuff and the gap between that and the statutory duty on schools, which then they're talking about September 2012. So there's things to be concerned about there, I think, in terms of information, advice and guidance. Obviously, Aim Higher we've touched on already, and that's a concern and a disappointment for lots of us. The changes to EMA is a concern as well, I think, and also things like the Travel to Learn Fund changes and all that type of thing. All of this stuff seems to be coming together all at the same time, all going to have an impact on learners. Universities have got their own funding pressures in terms of structural reorganisations going on within a lot of HEIs. Lots of HEIs have AIM Higher staff that have come to the end of contracts, and what's happening there? Are they going to be taken on by the universities, or are they going to be shed as staff, and what's that reorganisation within HEIs going to look like? Younger age groups, you know, Simon Hughes talks consistently about going back to year six and starting at primary school and working upwards. I think that's an important thing. We need to think about how that's going to be addressed. And we've seen this stuff in the Wolf Report about vocational learners and work experience and work-based learning. And we just need to be careful about how that plays out as well. And I'm not sure that a wide-ranging statement that just says work experience has done its time is fully getting into the nuances of actually what that does for students in terms of their own growth and their own understanding of things like economy and the workplace and just maturing and growing up and how all that sort of thing comes together within work experience. Obviously, work-based learning is a different thing, but very important as well. But let's not be quick to write off work experience as a good thing. I probably should have said this at the beginning of the presentation, but just so you know, when I'm talking about IAG from our association's point of view, these are really the framework definitions that we mean by IAG. Information, just the information without any discussion of the relative merits of options. Advice generally involves more interaction with the individual, explaining and interpreting the information, and guidance, as you know, is obviously much more personalised, client-centred, looking at sort of individual needs and exploring options and all that sort of thing. That's what we talk about when we mean IAG within HELOA. And it must just be such a difficult time for students trying to make their decisions, trying to decide what they're going to do in all of this changing policy context. And for us as HEIs, as we've touched on this morning, we don't know what the policy is because we still haven't got the white paper. And I think Robert Winston was very articulate this morning in terms of what he thought about that, and I would echo that entirely. And it just doesn't help when you get headlines like we had last Tuesday and Wednesday, which is sort of suggesting that people could just buy a place at university once courses are full, which to me doesn't seem like a good thing. But what that actually does is, regardless of whether it ends up in the white paper or not, and my understanding is that despite the furore last week, it will still be in the white paper. It just sets the debate back by a decade in terms of fair access. And that's the big problem that we've got, is getting students to engage with all these changes that are going on, accepting that they're here, that they are going to happen, but getting people to be making good decisions based in that changing policy, be in the white paper. It just sets the debate back by a decade in terms of fair access. And that's the big problem that we've got, is getting students to engage with all these changes that are going on, accepting that they're here, that they are going to happen, but getting people to be making good decisions based in that changing policy context. I haven't got the answers. I don't know what it is that we're going to do. But focusing on that and doing something about it, whatever, seems to me to be a really important thing. We can't let bad headlines detract from people making those right decisions. And there's a lot further to go on that, I think. I don't think that argument's finished yet. I just want to touch a little bit on what does this actually mean, all of these changes. Before I do that, I just want to reflect on 2012 and our intake for 2012. And we've already heard about, we don't understand what the demand is going to be like. We don't understand whether changes to the finance system is going to put people off going to university. My own view is that the discussions around meal tables in family homes won't be. I thought about this course. I found two places that do it well, and I really like both courses. One's charging $8,999 and one's charging $9,000. Which one should I go to? I just don't believe that will be the terms of the debate. I think it will be, do I go to university at all? And that's what we don't understand. If I was an 18-year-old and I wasn't as thoughtful as I am now that I'm 30, but if I was an 18-year-old with my sort of understanding of what's going on as I stand here, I might be thinking, I might just give it a miss in 2012, and I might just see what happens, and I might just see whether this coalition lasts, and I might just see how bad this gets, and I might think about having a gap year, and I might think about applying in 2013 when it becomes a bit more settled. So there might be a challenge for 2012 that people aren't really thinking about yet, in terms of people just thinking, I'll just wait and see. So let's think about the implications of that as well. In terms of behaviours and trends, we already understand what's happening in terms of fees, and that the fees for students, increased fees for students, are essentially replacing public funding for lots of courses, with the exception of some STEM subjects. That means that other subjects, arts, humanities, social sciences, as we all know, will be heavily dependent on their ability to attract students. And I wonder whether that's going to mean that there's going to be a drive towards vocational type subjects. Students look at going into university to do things that they think is going to give them a very definite career outcome. And I think what is not being highlighted enough in the debate, and the debate's been running for a long time, is about the public good of university as opposed to the private investment that we're asking people to make. And that just changes the whole debate significantly when you think about those terms. And by pursuing this strategy, it seems to me that that's just reductionism on a grand scale. And what we might be left with is a pure diminution of the public good of higher education, could possibly lead to a reduced curriculum as well, as universities start thinking about what subjects they might offer that are attractive to students. And ironically, that has the potential to lead to less choice for students. And I think that's something that's not being picked up enough on either. And as we've already heard today, the one of the real dangers is that we could be left with a student population that's less representative of society as a whole rather than more so. So what are we going to do about it? I just want to touch on something that SPAR do, because I think that this is really good and universities need to get to grips with this idea of a good applicant experience. And there's a good SPAR strategy paper on their website, which I'd urge you to have a look at. It describes a good applicant experience as being mutually beneficial to both the applicant and the HEI. Touching on what we've heard already this morning, I would agree with that. That a good experience prepares, informs and provides a quality of opportunity. Most importantly, that it matches the student's aims, abilities and aspirations with the character of the institution. And as we've already heard, therefore improves student retention and enhances the strategic mission of the university. That's just a bit of an aside, really, but I'd urge you to have a look at that SPAR stuff on their website, because I think there's lots that universities could get from that. In terms of what we're going to do, we're hearing lots of stuff about increasing the amount of information available to students. I don't think anyone might say that the university sector is already pretty good at information. There's already quite a lot of information about, lots of it in very accessible formats. We've got things like the key information sets that's going to come in soon as well. That, again, another layer of information for students to pick their way through. But information's essentially useless. In fact, information advice and guidance is useless because we have to accept that it's passive unless somebody actually does something with it. And just having information doesn't solve any of the problems. It's about the advice that's going to come in soon as well. That, again, another layer of information for students to pick their way through. But information's essentially useless. In fact, information advice and guidance is useless because we have to accept that it's passive unless somebody actually does something with it. And just having information doesn't solve any of the problems. It's about the advice that's going to come in soon as well. That, again, another layer of information for students to pick their way through. But information's essentially useless. In fact, information advice and guidance is useless because we have to accept that it's passive unless somebody actually does something with it. And just having information doesn't solve any of the problems. It's about the advice bit and it's about the guidance bit. And I think that the sector is really good at information. I think we're pretty good at advice. I don't think we're good enough at guidance. And that's one of the things that we need to focus on. Supporting parents and getting them engaged in this process is obviously critical as well. And we've already heard a lot about engaging teachers and advisors in this process as well. And I don't want to elaborate on that because I think we all understand. But I just want to reiterate that point again, that we have to accept that IAG is a passive thing and it only becomes active when people engage with it. So our strategy should not be about producing more information, but about finding ways in which people are using that information to make good and effective decisions. And let's not judge how effective we are by how much of it we've got. Let's judge it by how actively it's used and how good decisions are made as a result from it. So I haven't got any easy answers, but if you'll allow me a minute to just reflect on two things, which are kind of like personal hobby horses, really. But while I've got the microphone and no one's going to wrestle me to the ground, I feel like I'd like to say them anyway. One of the things that's really frustrating me, and I assume is probably frustrating you as well, are really sector leaders and important people in this sector getting their sort of airtime and talking about things like supply-side demand and reforming supply-side demand and talking about number controls and talking about market-led and talking about market diversification. And I wonder at what point is a senior sector leader going to stand up and say what we mean by all of that is students and what we mean by all of that is people making life-changing decisions in all of this stuff going on around. And let's stop talking about them as though they're not real people making real decisions. That's the first point that I'd make. At a conference that I spoke at last week, a senior director from HEFCE stood up and said, stop moaning and get on with it. Universities are going to be better off as a result of all of these changes, and you're not going to get any hugs or sympathy. So just go and do the best that you can. And in some ways, I have some sympathy with that, point, in the sense that we're not going to undo everything that's been done so far. I think we've just got to accept that it's happened and we need to find a good way of working with it. Whether universities end up better off, I think you can't really claim that until you understand what happens in terms of demand afterwards. So, and some universities definitely will be better off, but the sector won't be better off as a whole, I don't think. But we're not going to get any hugs or sympathy. We are going to have to concentrate on doing the best that we can with the resources that we've got, helping and supporting students. That's what we've got to focus on. And I spoke at something on Friday, which was just IAG professionals that was in the room. And what I was struck with by how negative everybody is. And I can understand that because we're all annoyed about Aim Higher. There are lots of people in schools and colleges that think that the EMA decisions are frankly despicable. You know, these are bad things. You know, the university pricing model, lots of people that work in the sector don't necessarily think that that's a good thing for students. So I understand all of those things. And I do understand the negativity. But the biggest tragedy of all, I think, is not the fact that we're losing all of these support mechanisms. What could end up being the biggest tragedy is that us as a group of IAG professionals and the IAG community lose our ability to inspire people to aspire towards HE. And that's the biggest risk, and that's the thing that we've got to tackle as a community. Because it's about students making good decisions, making the right decisions for them. We've heard already about the benefit that it gives to those individuals. We've talked about the benefit that it gives to the communities that they live in. We know about the benefit that it gives to the economy of the country in a global economy. And we know about the good that it does to society at large. And it's not just about students making a decision, but it's about students making good decisions, going to university, staying at university, achieving at university, and then being able to do all those things afterwards. And despite the terms in which the debate has been couched, we have to remember and we have to promote the fact that there is still a very public good for people going to university in this country. And let's not lose sight of that.